You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100, and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
It was always a case of get Sunday out the way first and see how he does today. So he had a quiet afternoon against Brighton, just the 12 shots.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Planet F. PL, the world where everything revolves around fantasy Premier League. My name is Serge.
And my name is James.
Did anything rise again today, James? It's Easter Sunday, isn't it?
Chocolate.
So, or is that tomorrow? I'm not sure when Christ was
No, resurrected. It's probably best we don't try and get into that. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Nothing rose up today. I mean, Salah did score. And it's been a while since I've had Salah in my
Jesus
points,
didn't.
He did not. Jesus did not.
Did you get the bit when you saw he was in the team? Did you think, oh, Peter Drury's going to go mad for this?
Yeah,
he must
have
had so 100%. Many things set up.
I do feel like nowadays commentators are more worried about what they've got planned than actually talking about what's going on in the pitch. The amount of times they don't pay attention to what's actually going on. It really does feel weird after this weekend when you listen to commentary. Like I'm sure we're watching different things here going on, but look, it is what it is. End of game week 30. We edge forward. How was your game week?
Meh, but I kind of knew it would be competing with plenty of people wildcard, and the next one's probably going to be a bit meh as well. I think my advantage probably lies in the end as I tend to be a game week 35 wild carder. I took a -4, which did work out. Doesn't sound like it on the face of it. I brought Gusto in for Kirkez. That was always a given for me in any case.
Yep.
Particularly when it came out on Friday that Kirkez was a major doubt as well. And I thought, well, Kelly's fit, Hill's fit. Kirkez will be probably third choice fullback, maybe even fourth behind Dango Utaru, who came on and did well there against Luton. Sure enough, Kirkez started, got subbed before they conceded as well.
So that's
clean sheet.
You're 5 points down so far.
No, not really, because I would have started Gabriel.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I'm still 5 points down. So I bought Palmer in for Bowen.
Yep. Close.
Which is 5 points up. So it's kind of net zero. But the honest truth is I was never going to start Jared Bowen anyway this week. The hit effective for me this week was over Leon Bailey.
Right.
So I think I've landed about three up, I think.
Yeah.
From the hit, all things considered. Because I would have played Gabriel if I hadn't brought Gusto in.
No. But you do have an injured Gusto now.
I do have an injured Gusto. I have an injured Ollie Watkins. I possibly have an injured Alfie Doughty. It's good, this.
Don't forget Alphonse Areola.
Yeah, I'm worried about that.
I'm
going to play Dubravka because Newcastle looks so fucking good defensively. Do you know what I mean?
Very good. Very good.
Mind you, they're playing Everton and Rodrigo Muniz has scored more goals than Everton in the last 2 months. So, it's a true stat. 58 points for me, -4. Returnees being our captain's Sonny. He had kind of been on Palmer all week, but to be honest, by roundabouts Wednesday, Thursday, I'd convinced myself I was going to go with Sonny because I'd decided he was either going to play an hour up front or he was going to end up playing the last half hour up front. And I even came to the conclusion that the last half hour up front would be better.
Yep.
And he ended up playing basically the whole game up front. We played 85 minutes up front. Sasani 20, Cole Palmer 15, Pau Torres 6. I've got a clean sheet. That's like a gold medal in this game, isn't it?
I think over the weekend, being that there was only the three clean sheets, Villa, City and Arsenal, I think a lot of people with Arsenal players like Gabriel, I benched him, you benched him, many might have done. Is that lingering legacy of the game week 29 when there was only four teams playing, where a lot of people would have had a Villa defender from that period, whether it's Moreno like me.
Well, those who went in late, game week 29, the advice was Ezri Konsa because he was the only one we were comfortable on. And obviously he smashed in the 15-pointer. He crossed in the 15-pointer this week.
I mean, his ownership must be still people like 1.6%. Nothing.
My other returnee was Ivan Toney, 5-pointer. Gullwin out winning last night, because anyone who watched that, we'll talk about it, but anyone who watched that game last night must have been gobsmacked with what they were watching, because Brentford battered them for the whole game. Brentford had an XG of over 3. It was bigger than the XG they had them when they beat them 4-0 last season. I think combined over the two games, they've had over 5 XG in their two home games against Man United. They slaughtered them. Yeah. When Mason Mount scored, it would have been biggest robbery of the season by some distance if United had won it from there. So I was just pleased for them. They got signed out of the game because they deserved it. Blankers otherwise, though, for Dubravka, Malo Gusto. I went to the toilet half-time, saw Chelsea was winning 1-0. And Burnley were down to 10 men and went, yep, oh, that's a clean sheet banked in my head.
Nice.
What's gone on there? We'll talk about that as well. Porro 2-pointer. Had a good chance to score yesterday. James Maddison was disappointing. 2 points. Foden and Haaland disappointing today. I should be relieved that Foden made it beyond 60 minutes, I think. Ollie Watkins, 1-pointer. Had a great chance in the first half and obviously went off at half time, and Villa were in cruise control in the second half. He stayed on the pitch, probably would have returned. So yeah, is what it is. Not great. According to Live FPL, and we are recording pretty much straight after the City Arsenal game, dropping from about 168k to about 194k, I think.
Okay, not too bad. Not too bad
You've
at all.
You've had a good week though.
Reasonable week this week for me. I made 2 transfers and took a -4 as well, just like you. Getting rid of Foden for Salah was always on the cards because I had 4 point something in the bank. So it's like, I only need to make one other transfer to make it worthwhile. And the transfer on my mind was Moreno to Gusto. And then I started looking at, differential show patrons will know, then we started looking at other transfers that could be made as well. And one of them was Morris to Muniz. But if I did the Morris to Muniz move, it gave me enough money to do Foden to Salah and keep Moreno, who at the home tie against the Wolves, it made sense not to force that for a -8. So those are the two moves I ended up making. Getting rid of Foden for Salah and getting rid of Morris for Muniz for a -4. Now, both have returned. So in the end, it's worked out well. But also, importantly, I've got Salah ready for midweek for Sheffield United as well, which is the armband is already on him, James. I captained Sonny like you. I already owned Palmer. The difference being I didn't sell Jared Bowen. I kept him. Again, it would have been a -8 or something to get rid of Jared Bowen. So I kept him, whereas he was your make weight over Foden, right? It's a toss up between the two. So
well, No, I didn't have to sacrifice Bowen. And we discussed that as well, didn't we? On our Tottenham podcast, I said, watching Jared Bowen Tuesday night for England, I was like, not sure I want to do that. But on the fixtures, it felt the right call.
Yeah, I get that. Moreno, otherwise defensively, nothing. Kelleher, nothing. Lascelles was like a gift this time last week in the sense that with Botman out, I thought, here we go, my 3.9 million.
You've had him for about 3 months, haven't you?
A long time. But that's all he was. My 3.9 million defender is finally going to actually be really useful to me. And I started him as well. That didn't last long.
Well, I've got some news for you. He's obviously yellow flagged at the moment. You can take that yellow flag off, Such.
I read earlier today that it was ACL, no?
Yeah, it's a red flag, unfortunately, yeah.
Ah, yeah. Okay, cool. Oh, you're trying to be funny, right?
It's not funny, but no. I was trying to give you some light and then take it away.
But you know what?
For a change, you wouldn't know.
All he'll do is go back to third on the bench for now. I've got 2 injury problems coming out this week. James Areola. I've got Kelleher at the back there. So
Well, that's great for this week, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll do the job. Like, it doesn't mean I have to force the issue. And obviously Lascelles, but then Gabriel and Doughty are my two other defenders. Like, that, Gabriel, I'm sure, will.
Well, Gabriel's played today, isn't he? So that flag will genuinely come off.
And who's Doughty your other two? Played 82. Moreno and Porro. So Lascelles genuinely is like fifth on the list.
So you'll probably play, I'm going to guess, will you go Doughty over Moreno?
My bus team at the moment is Moreno. My bus team at the moment is Moreno.
Okay, Arsenal rather away. Than Doughty, yeah?
Yeah, Arsenal away. Just
yeah, I get it. There's more chance of Villa shutting City out than Luton shutting Arsenal out.
They won there,
disagree
right?
With that.
A while back. They won there a little while ago, didn't they? So
who? Villa at City?
Yeah, didn't they? Or did they get a draw? No.
I mean, today's the first time City haven't scored in a home Premier League game since Crystal Palace at home. I think the stat was October 2021, so 2.5 years.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we'll talk about Arsenal's performance later on, obviously. So,
indeed.
In terms of bus team, carry on with your bus team anyway. Salah captain, obviously, that's in place.
Kelleher, Moreno, Gabriel, Porro. My midfield is Bowen, Palmer, Salah captain, Sonny, Vice, and then Muniz, Haaland, Watkins.
Vice over Haaland.
Yeah. I just think we're a bit shit, mate, to be honest.
I saw that yesterday.
And obviously Watkins is in my bus team at the moment. The transfer I'm going to make, James, is going to be Watkins to...
Can I guess?
Yeah,
Isak.
Yes. I would have moved it last night because Watkins was due a drop, but I didn't. I thought maybe he'll be able to last out another fixture, and he didn't drop last night, Watkins, but I think he will today. And Isak was quite a way off going up, actually, but I think I'm going to go Isak. That frees me up enough money to, if I really wanted to, get Bowen up to Saka, because Saka had a drop over the weekend as well. Watkins to Isak gives me enough money to go Bowen to Saka, but I won't force that for this week. We're still at home against you guys, and you know what they say, cup final and all that, blah, blah, blah. We'll want a reaction from what happened on Saturday. So I'm not gonna force it for this.
Ideal scenario, isn't it, for my team? You've taken a bad beating in the end, having looked like you had a game won, and oh, look what's next. It's the Planet FPL Derby. Yay.
Yeah,
I'm sure you'll respond and put in a good display. No one's doubting it.
I'm leaving the country for it, James. I can't be here for it.
I'm going to Westfield Shopping Centre for it.
Oh, so enjoy.
No deadline stream Tuesday night, guys. I've got better things to do.
Enjoy. So I'm going to be making that Watkins to Isak move. Probably even get it done tonight, possibly.
When you had your season ticket at West Ham, what row were you?
2-6-1.
Oh, so that's different.
I was upper tier.
Yeah, I've got upper tier at Stratford on Tuesday as well. I think I'm row 60 or something. I've been up there before, don't I? I need my
James, I'm going mad. I was seat 261, row 61. Yeah,
oh,
row
okay, 61. So similar, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a reasonable height. It's not in the gods.
It's different postcode, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take your binoculars. Take whatever you want. Enjoy it.
Right, moving on, before we turn this into a West Ham v Tottenham farce, which we could easily do. Bus team for me this week's worth talking about because, Suj, you have many times in the past said, man, you're copying my moves when we've been doing similar things. So for me, what I did, and part of getting Palmer as well, was putting money in the bank in terms of opening up the route. I kind of always knew that I was selling James Maddison this week, irrespective of what happened yesterday. Kind of worrying as well that in both of the Fulham and the Luton games, he's been taken off relatively early, sort of around the 65-70 minute mark. He's not really on it at the moment. He hasn't been since injury. I don't want to say he's playing badly. He's just nowhere near the form that he was showing at the start of the season. So it was always going to be Maddison to go, and I had two paths from there. One was, once I'd got Palmer in, one free transfer, Bukayo Saka. The other option, of course, is -4, Mo Salah. But to get Salah in, I need to find some money from somewhere else. And the plan at that point was always going to be, well, Watkins would be the sacrifice. Well, now Watkins is going to need binning, isn't he? I think.
Yep.
I was kind of prepared to maybe hold him through as a really good differential for next weekend at home to Brentford. But the fact that that flag's there, I think is enough to push me to say, yeah, do you know what? Let's take him out minus four. I'll have around about 6.2 or 6.... Yeah, I think it's 6.2 for a forward. Any guesses, Suj?
Muniz.
Muniz needed for Salah, right? It's exactly where this is at. So,
yeah,
I think that's straightforward. And again, I might well be taking that minus four tonight as well because the two of those are both on the verge of rising. I can't see a reason not to take a risk. I think with Salah, it was always a case of get Sunday out the way first and see how he does today. So he had a quiet afternoon against Brighton, just the 12 shots. 12 shots. This is most ever in a Premier League game.
The annoying thing is that because a lot were off target or not on target, no bonus, it's affected him quite badly today in that he was completely out of it, even though he scored the winning goal. So it works both ways. You're kind of looking at it and saying, yes, he was involved, which means go get him. But he's shot himself in the foot a little bit today.
I don't think we're looking at that Maddison and Watkins to Salah and Muniz, and it leaves me a bit more money in the bank to do something different for the final 2 weeks before our free hit and then wild card. There's no reason not to do that, is there?
Nope.
He's almost like overthink. Oh, well, I've got more than the Muniz money. Let's start looking at players. Like maybe if Cunha had played yesterday, because I quite like Wolves' next three fixtures. If Cunha had played yesterday and shown he was fit, I might have been tempted to go down that route. Burnley and Forest away and West Ham at home in the middle. But obviously he didn't participate at all. So there's no temptation to go down that route. You know, alternatives, Wood, great, but I probably wouldn't even start him at Tottenham in game week 32. The two home games against Fulham and Wolves are okay. Muniz, I look at all three games and think, yeah, I'll have that. Or even do the next two and use game week 33 as a 1 week punt for a different player just at the day rather than play Muniz at West Ham. But yeah, I'll get to see your lot up. No, I was going to say up close and personal at the weekend, but I'll be further away than those watching on TV probably, wouldn't I? But I'll get to see your lot live and see what it's all about defensively.
You don't have to go, you know. You can watch it on TV. You can zoom in. You don't have to waste an evening.
Yeah, do you know what I hate about TV? I was ever saying this again to the patrons during
everything.
The Liverpool game everything. Today. Oh, I hate it, mate. That when that they cut to a replay and then they cut off the replay. It happened with Connor Bradley today. Oh, let's show a replay because we've got to keep our audience engaged. And they go back to the game and Bradley's shooting over. Like, how did it get there? I have no idea. Does my nothing. I don't have to worry about that shit when I go to the stadiums, mate. So, yeah, it's going to be Salah Muniz for me.
But James, all you have to worry about in the stadium is VAR. We'll probably talk about that this episode as well. There's no debate. So, I mean, Salah was lively as today. There's not even a debate on the armband. Like,
You know my rule is don't argue with Haaland when he's got a home game. And I think there's a couple as shown, and I obviously did argue against him this week, but Arsenal are the best defensive team in the league. I think that was perfectly reasonable to go against. Most people did.
Yep.
But Villa at home, without John McGinn, I think Wolves showed in that opening quarter at the weekend that there's some frailties there. I'd be surprised if he didn't return, but Salah against Sheffield United. I mean, what am I taking a minus four hit for if I don't captain him almost, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's got to be that. I'm probably going to be in a pickle defensively. Gabriel Antaluton's obviously perfectly reasonable. And jokes aside, Dubravka
against... play Porro. Oh, you've got Porro or Dougie?
Dubravka against Everton is fine. Yes, of course I will play Porro at West Ham. But there's no expectation on a clean sheet because there never is with my team. But then I would play Gusto against Manchester United. And that's probably how I'll leave it. And the thing is as well, because Chelsea's Thursday night, there's every chance Pochettino's press will be Wednesday and we won't know shit before deadline. So I'll probably leave it like that and I'll probably go Doughty as the first defensive sub and Pau Torres as the second. I think me Doughty over Torres is a bit different to your Doughty over Moreno.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say. I just look at that. I think it's kind of golden rule now reflecting on it, isn't it? And again, I definitely would have bought Gusto either way this week. So the hit very much felt like it was for Palmer. Don't take a minus four for a defender. Like, if you've got something they're playing, it's just so shit for everybody this year. Like, what's the point? I look at it and I think, right, Arsenal might beat Luton about 5-1 and there's every chance Doughty will create the goal. and he'll finish on 3 points. Right. So then if I take a minus four for another defender, that defender's also got to get an attack in return.
Yep. Not
for
worth it.
To be justifiable. It's not. So, and the other thing is as well, Doughty and Torres are actually both reasonable for me in 32. So Doughty's got Bournemouth at home and Torres has got Brentford at home. So then that looks better. Poro's fine for 32. Gabriel's, as I think we can now say, is fine for any week. So that gives me a bit of breathing space, even if Gusto was out for a while. I think not to worry about that too much.
Nice. Let's rattle through some of these games then from the weekend, James. Obviously, we know by the time this goes out to you and the public, it's late on Sunday evening, Monday, and then Tuesday is it. Turnaround time, deadline again. Not a lot of time to listen to it. We'll keep it relevant to game week 32 and 31, 32 moves and that kind of thing that you may be looking at. Newcastle 4, West Ham United 3.
It was fun, wasn't it?
I don't know. All I can say is, I suppose, could have scored a goal and assist, got 12 points. Bowen got a goal and assist, got 10 points. Goal for Antonio, 6 points. Goal for Paqueta, 5 points.
Assist for Paqueta, Bo.
Oh, sorry, it was, yeah. 2 goals and an assist for Isak, 15 points. And 2 goals for Barnes.
What are points. You doing?
Just the facts of the game.
I know you want to rant to get it off your chest, mate.
No, I'm not even talking about it. It's irrelevant.
We saw your tweet.
Yeah, it's irrelevant.
Don't if you're angry, don't go on that thing, mate.
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant.
Well, why is it irrelevant?
What happened in the match is irrelevant because VAR and the referees will dictate what the result's going to be.
Okay, well, I presume we're talking about...
So what do you want to know? You want to know what happened in the match?
Yeah, what happened in the match? Did you play well or not?
You want to pick players for FPL. Yeah. I've just told you 4 players there. Isak, Gordon, Kudus, Bowen. Those are decent players to pick. That's all you need to know. All right. The rest is irrelevant.
Serious question. Okay. I think this particularly maybe falls into the line of those free hit 34, wildcard 35. If you were buying one of them for Tottenham at home, Wolves away, Fulham at home is fine. Who would you go for?
Of those 4 players?
Of your attacking players, yeah.
Oh, no. I had Isak and Gordon in my 4.
I'm asking about West Ham players if people want to do that, mate. Right, it's Bowen. It's still Bowen, isn't it?
If it is, Kudus will go off. And if you buy Kudus, Bowen will go off. I don't think there's enough in it.
Okay, fine. I just don't think
there's enough in it.
I don't think many people are doing that anyway. You want my opinion on the penalties, don't you?
I don't care about your opinion. The second one wasn't a penalty. As simple as that.
Why is it not?
You can have your opinion as much as you want. It wasn't a penalty. So
why is it not?
Why is it not a penalty?
Yeah, I'm asking, why is it not a penalty?
Well, okay, so if you go to kick a football and I put my foot in the way of your foot, I get the foul.
So what did Calvin Phillips kick, the ball or Gordon?
Sure, but Gordon was hooking Calvin. So if you go to kick a football, say you're going to kick a football and I hook your leg, the kicking leg, I hook your foot, your kicking leg, have you fouled me?
This is a different question.
You run up to kick a football and I hook your kicking leg from behind. Is that you kicking me or is that me kicking you?
Let's ask a different question first then.
Yeah.
Do you think the first one was a penalty?
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with the first one. Okay, other than that, they took a long time about it. I don't know. It's one of those where, and particularly because Mavropanos kicked the ball. So Gordon got the ball. Mavropanos.
So you might have had a problem with the offside, but you didn't have a problem with Soufal on Gordon specifically for the first penalty.
Like, it was clumsy. I don't think it was like a foul. Like, it was a shit foul to give away.
I think the first one.
But
is,
I didn't have a problem with it.
The first one is only really a debate on the offside or not, and I think it comes down to interpretation. And I think they're obviously judging whether Mavropanos has enough time to understand what he's doing with his touch. I use it like a block or a deflection. Does he have enough time? What I would say is he definitely hasn't. He doesn't have any control of what he's doing, though.
He's just swung his leg to kick the ball.
I wouldn't have had a problem if that was annulled for an offside, but I also don't have a problem either that the decision stood, because I think it was down to an interpretation. Yeah. I think, therefore, they've gone, fine, do you know what? He's give it on the pitch.
Yeah,
stick with it. I'm okay with that.
There's nothing about that that I thought, oh, whatever.
Andy Gordon,
the fact that it took too long.
He's the best in the business at winning pens. We see loads of players do it, and we've all got our culprits from our own clubs, that kind of step across, I'm almost fouling you, but then if I step across and then hold my body, you know, when the two people are running together, there's going to be a collision, isn't it? It's natural. That's not what happens this.
But let me go. We saw that three or four times at the weekend. We saw that with Dan Byrne on Kudus, the two players running side by side, cutting across, although that was a shoulder charge. We saw the one at Chelsea against Burnley, where he cut across.
They're
got
different.
A penalty.
I'm talking about putting a foot in front of someone else's foot. Right?
Okay.
What's really weird about this very specific one with the Phillips foul on Gordon is that Gordon doesn't just put his foot in the way and like try and shield the ball. He puts his foot in the way and turns to face Phillips with the ball behind him.
Well, he didn't make an effort to kick the ball.
Yeah, I know. I know. But they've only looked at one thing. And the only thing they've looked at is, does Calvin Phillips kick him? Yeah. Hate the law, mate. Technically, it's a pen. They're always going to give that as a pen, mate.
I don't care.
And I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying they're always going to give that as a pen. How have you lost that from 3-1 up? That's that, 3-2. But all right, you're still winning. What happens next?
Sure, but the momentum of the decision changes
it. You know,
goals changes games, right? We're 3-1 up and fairly cruising.
You were.
And it coincides with the substitution, Antonio, for Phillips. And then a few minutes later, that happened. Obviously, you're going to get the fans are going to be up for it. At 3-1, I didn't feel comfortable. I wanted another goal. But I felt like if we can pick them on the counter, there's another goal in it for us. I didn't get to see a replay enough to see how many seconds from the Newcastle corner to the Bowen goal, but it's going to be about 10.
What a goal that was, by the way. Brilliant from Kudus.
That's what I expected to happen. The problem is when we went 3-2, I only expected it to finish 4-3. Simple as that. And it was the defensive change that he made. He put Phillips in for Antonio, swiveled it around up top. But Antonio was having a good game and causing them trouble. So that's basically it. Then the last goal was a ridiculously good through ball from Isak. Like, it cut the defence in half.
Oh, you mean for the equaliser?
Was that the equaliser?
Yeah, Barnes is the winner from the edge of the box, isn't it?
Okay.
On the winning goal, I was watching. So I watched the first 20 minutes at home, headed towards the lane. Got there just as the second half was starting, which the second half in the ground. And everybody in the ground was really engaged in it, by the way, because it was a cracking game, right? It was a brilliant football match. And on the winning goal, when the ball went over the top, I shouting, Zuma's got to win that. And he lets Gordon get in front of him.
He bottled
and
it.
As soon as it happened, I said to my dad, I said, they're going to score here.
He bottled it. I agree.
That's bad because the one thing is physically imposing.
And I think he had a good game as well up until then. Like, he played probably the best I'd seen him play for quite some time, Zuma. So
you're an issue defensively though, aren't you? You've said this for a while.
No Alvarez. If Alvarez had been on the pitch and/or that penalty hadn't been given, I think we go on to win it and no one says anything.
Do you think he picks the same starting lineup against Tottenham? Like with the four attacking players. I suppose he has to, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he will. I think it'll be the same again.
You've got to think
Fabian more about, goal. If Areola's out, Fabian goal.
You've got to think more about what you're doing off the ball, though, particularly in central areas.
Yeah. When Lewis Hall, who else? Almiron, they made three changes at the same time. That's when Newcastle start getting control of midfield. A lot more.
Well, I think they went into a state of nothing left to lose. So they obviously lost Jamal Lascelles, big taste. He really gutted for him that he's obviously going to miss basically the rest of the year, him and Sven Botman. Sickening. He's obviously gone off early. That meant that they changed the whole back four. So they put Livramento over to the left, moved Scher along, Kraft along. It was a mess. That then he's obviously resulted in moving Kraft off, putting Murphy at right back, Hall at left back after Livramento got injured. Almiron got injured just after he came on as well. They were just a patched up mess with Burn and Cher at centre back, a winger at right back, and a midfield player at left back, basically. I know we've seen Lewis Hall play left back, but the long term thought with him is probably always that he's going to be a midfield player. That was certainly the thought out of Chelsea. And he's hardly played for Newcastle. It's felt like there's been a lack of trust in him. That back four that finishes the game is presumably now what's going to play, I guess. Unless, obviously, Trips is back. So there's a fair chance Jack Murphy and Hall are going to play fullback for a while with Burn in at centre-back with Cher. Yep. And they've got enough problems between their distancing with those guys at the back and Dubravka as it is. That'll be worse now. So, yeah, like, look, I'm comfortable to play Dubravka against Everton, but I think the point is, if people are wildcarding now, you definitely want Newcastle. There's no doubt about it. I don't know where to tell you to go defensively unless you gamble on Trips being back. That's it. I think ignore it.
I wouldn't bother. I'm going to buy Isak this week. If I wasn't free hitting in 35 wildcarding, if I wasn't wildcarding in 35, sorry, I would consider figuring out a way to get Gordon this weekend coming. But
he's suspended.
He's suspended for the midweek game.
Yeah, but I mean, then it's Fulham, Tottenham, you're less fussed. Yeah,
exactly. And hopefully if he picks up another couple of yellows in between now and 35,
he'd have to get booked in both, I think, to miss game week 34, which if you're free hitting, you won't be bothered about. 35 he's going to be fine for.
Yeah, now. So by 30,
unless he got booked in 32 and 33, I think.
Yeah, barring, and even then, he's going to serve two games and then you're going to want him for maybe 36, 37. I all going well and him being fit and available or unsuspended and available, I'm going to pick him up on wild card for sure. He's lively. He's looking good. And Isak this week. And that'll probably be it for Newcastle, if I'm honest with you. But yeah, I do think Gordon's...
If I was wild carding, I'd be very tempted to still stick Gordon in.
Yeah, at his price, 6 million.
I'd be tempted because I know I'd want that in game at 35.
He's just a Geordie Cole Palmer, isn't he, up north? A great price and just delivering the business. He's playing like an £8 million midfielder.
Isak's the best pick now and the only other one to be considered. And it is a really interesting one for a very small crowd that might free hit this week. He's Harvey Barnes. Well, presumably, he has to start now.
They've got no other players.
he's had four shots on target in that spell where he's come on the pitch, nearly got in the end of another one at the back post as well. So he was terrific when he came on. He didn't look like a player who'd missed a lot of football. I think he's a likeable player when he's on form. He's a player we've looked at plenty of times in the past for fantasy. So Harvey Barnes feels punty. I imagine where they'll end up, I was going to say when everyone's fit, obviously that's unfortunately that's never going to happen for them. But in terms of the attacking players, they're probably going to end up with Gordon moving to the right. What I would say is obviously that's what happened during the game on Saturday. And Gordon, to me, didn't look any less threatening out there. He actually put some really nice crosses in. Whereas obviously on the left, he wants to come in and shoot a bit more. But it won't stop him still arriving at the back post for low crosses and things like that. I think Howe's lost faith in Almiron. I think his performances have really regressed this year.
Well,
I see it becoming Gordon right, Barnes left, Isak up front.
In the middle.
They're walking wounded, but you want to look, because they've got the best fixtures for the rest of the season. I've got them top from here to the end now.
Yeah, Isak's decent get.
Yeah,
cool. Let's talk about Bournemouth 2, Everton 1. I thought Sean Dyche might pull it out of the bag, James, but he didn't. And Dominic Solanke on the score sheet punishing people that have moved away from him now. He's still ticking along nicely.
Two bonus despite a yellow as well.
Nothing making you consider Solanke over Isak as a potential move?
It depends on your strategy, right? So if you're heading towards game week 34, you probably prefer Solanke to Isak at this moment, I'm guessing, because the double in 34 and you're still walking into Palace at home and Luton away. Like, those are on and are not selling, surely, if they're heading towards 34. So you've got to split a camp now, right? I think if you're free hitting 34... you're definitely going Isak over Solanke at the moment. If you're doing that the other way around, you're going Solanke first and then looking to move to Isak or Hoyland later in the day. That's the sort of idea I think you've got at the moment. Solanke's the only one really to consider, I think, from from Bournemouth. They're not keeping clean sheets as it is. We keep saying Neto is a little bit of a risk in terms of we might get left out at some point, and he's at fault for the equalising goal. He's got to deal better with that. Basically just drops it at Beto's feet. There's nothing else to be too interested in Bournemouth at the moment. Tyler Adams started and supposedly played really well. That's nice to see because he's missed nearly the whole of the season. I think the three behind Solanke, which is Cliver with then Tavernier and Semenya either side, is their best setup probably confirmed now that Luis Sinisterra has ruled out for this April period. So if you are looking for something like Semenya is a competitive enabler to Munez, but Munez is just on too much of a hot streak at the moment, I think. I wouldn't particularly want to go for a Cliver or Tavernier personally. Doesn't appeal enough. And I'd just avoid it defensively now. So I think it's Solanke or nothing. And I think when I free hit in 34, that's what it'll be for me. It'll be Solanke or nothing. Like if he's not fit, I don't see me going, oh, I'm going to go Semenya instead.
No.
I don't think I would. I'd rather go for Watkins or Haaland with a single, I think, to be honest. So that's that for them. You said on Everton, you thought Sean Dyche might pull it out the bag. Well, I think, you know what Everton needs, Suj? Is a points deduction. Because it fired them up last time. The last time they got a points deduction, they won four games in a row, didn't they? The amount of points they've got since? Five.
Wow.
They haven't won since that four games, Suj. That spell was between game week 14 and 17.
They haven't scored, or they scored this game, but prior to that, their goal record has been bad as well.
Well, the only game they've scored more than one in since that 2-0 win at Burnley in game 17 was the 2-2 draw with Tottenham.
Wow.
And everyone scores against my team, so that doesn't even really count. So, Muniz has got more goals than Everton, including that fixture.
They're 3 points clear of Luton with a game in hand. So maybe points on the board is their biggest friend right now. If they get taken off, you're right, James, it's going to be really difficult.
Well, we've not had time to pore over the detail yet, but I see Everton released just how big their losses were just before we recorded. Suj, do you want to?
They're big. They're big. Initially, they said £89 million is statutory losses for one season. If you think about profit and sustainability being 105 over three, doesn't leave a much wiggle room, does it?
Well, we know they've been done for the previous one, so they obviously have got to be over.
This is a problem. I think the thing that wasn't so clear in the way they worded it is they've obviously got stadium expenditure of 200 plus million, and whether or not that's coming out of that 89 or the 89 was post 200 plus million, we need to do a little bit more digging, which we'll definitely be covering off in money and football.
We've not had time to look yet, but if that 89 million isn't accountable for money spent on stadium in any way, then they're guaranteed another points deduction.
That won't be this season.
It's said in the report that there's 200 million spent on, so, but then I also don't believe that Everton posted 110 million profit excluding that. Do you?
Well, they said 45 million in player sales, player was the trading, profit.
But we know the wage expenditure there's been, and they have been trying to control it, don't get me wrong. But yeah, the point being here, Everton might be in for another point deduction, but they need some form of kick up the arse. Let's be real, right? If we were looking at a different team here, you've gone 3 months without winning, man. Three and a half. Is it three and a half more?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think the manager's head would be on the chopping block, but you'd think also if Sean Dyche isn't going to be able to do it, then not many others will be. Although he did go down with Burnley, didn't he? So,
but Sean Dyche has been manager for the last 3.5 months that they haven't won in, mate. So
I know.
I don't know. Is there a question now to be asked?
Yeah, there is. He probably gets a little bit more leeway than maybe he deserves sometimes. But the thing is that still kings of XG. Well, I don't know so much about this weekend. Let's have a look at what the actual XG was. 1.01, so they match their XG.
I mean, they've ended up losing here because of an absolutely absurd own goal where Branthwaite and Pickford both hesitate towards the ball, and in between it at the other end is poor Seamus Coleman, who tries to chest it back, which he shouldn't really do because it's got to at least go wide of the goal. Oh, it's a disaster, and they just equalised as well. And it does feel like if Everton tick over with just the draws here and there, they'll be all right because you can see winnable games there, right? They're four of their home games have got left to Burnley, Forest, Brentford, Sheffield United. That's why people keep saying, oh, I think Everton will be all right. But the points deduction might be decisive here.
Yep, indeed.
Cool. We won't be looking at Everton assets at this minute before they go to Newcastle, despite Newcastle's problems. Where would you even begin to look at an Everton asset at this stage?
Yeah, true.
I think, well, I'll add to that, wildcarders might be looking at Pickford or Brathwaite, but I don't think anyone would be buying that this week.
No. Chelsea 2, Burnley 2. I mean, but I watched the first 20 minutes of this, 25 minutes of this. Burnley were pretty good when they got their foot on the ball and started playing it around, particularly Odubert. Odubert looks like he's lively and could pop off with returns at any given time. But in the end, the debate about Cole Palmer, do you know what? I think there's this mental thing about captaining a £5.6 million.
I agree with that.
I look at it and I'm like, should I, when you've got the power of Sun? How many points for the season for this guy now? Let's have a look.
Well, the only thing I'd say to caveat that is my intention is to captain him in game week 32 at the moment.
157 points. He's well on target to do over 200 points this season.
But I could revert to Sun again.
Which game week did you say, James?
Game week 32, they go to Sheffield United, don't they?
Yeah.
The concern with not captaining him this week started with, why did he not get on the pitch for England? I couldn't understand why he didn't get on at all in the Belgium game. Poch said he was fine. Schumacher is fine. But then I was also thrown by the fact that Richarlison didn't play any minutes for Brazil. So it kind of alerted me to think, yeah, Richarlison's not ready here. And that really changed the game because of my expectation on Son's minutes. That's in terms of central area. That's what changed the game for me then. But yeah, absolute beast of a player. I mean, it's fair to ask the question, where would Chelsea be without him?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's one of the players of the year and they're 11th. And I mean, when I say players of the year, I mean the whole league.
13 goals, 9 assists, 22 attacking returns so far.
It's only since his first game. I think it's, and it might even be that it's him now. Since his first game at Fulham, game week 7 or so, it was before the weekend, only Watkins had got more points than him in FPL. And yeah, after that, at the weekend, it might even just be Palmer now.
That was his first start, was game week 7, you're right. Yeah. Wow. Incredible.
Phenomenal.
Burnley, any hope? I mean, they're
what's that, 3 unbeaten now, isn't it?
I feel like they're hanging in by their fingernails. They're still 4 points behind Luton and 4 points behind Forest. Obviously, well,
they've had another big boost today. Everton's financial results. I mean, it's in touching distance. And
just
the next four is Wolves at home, Everton away, Brighton at home, Sheffield United away. I mean, it's the old famous one, isn't it? Could they? But, you know, look, at least now they've drawn at West Ham. 2-2. They've drawn it, and they were what, winning going into injury time?
Yep.
They've drawn this one, which is miraculous considering the circumstances. And obviously beat Brentford, where admittedly on that occasion they were massively helped by Sergio Reguilón's red card. As I said to you earlier, though, when I went to the toilet a while ago on Saturday and I saw Burnley had a player sent off, I was like, should have captain Palmer, clean sheet for Gusto's banked. I couldn't believe when I got back to the train station and saw the score, I couldn't believe it. Could not Chelsea believe it. Chelsea, it's like, what's happened?
Chelsea being Chelsea.
They nearly lost as well. Mm. Rodriguez should have won it. Now, to caveat that, Chelsea have had a shit ton of chances as well, but clearly not played well enough to deserve it. People aren't reflecting on it and going, well, you know, this one rattled off the woodwork. The goalkeepers had this worldie and that worldie. And it's like, it almost sounds like Burnley deserved it with 10 men. How have you landed there? You can't believe that Chelsea haven't won that. And the red card's shitty as well. Like, it's not a penalty, is it? I don't think.
Not for me. Not for me either.
But unfortunately, it's one of them. Once the refs made the decision, because of the position on the pitch and where Mudrik's going, if he deems that an offence, he's going to book him. So then guess what? VAR ain't going to intervene.
No.
Shit. Shit, that, because it's too harsh. Vincent Kompany lost his nut, didn't he?
He got sent off.
I presume he'll be suspended for at least Tuesday's encounter with Wolves. Despite the good run of fixtures, I don't think you're going to be looking at Burnley because, again, you know, you could say, oh, Foster's back in the team. Fofana will obviously be back from ineligibility, but Muniz is sitting right there. There's not a reason to have to go down that route unless people want to end up with two players like that. And if it's really short term, I don't mind Foster or Fofana. Fofana, maybe. But yeah. Amdouni and Rodriguez are both minutes threats to that now as well. I think it's avoidable.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think I'd be looking at them for a short-term enabler defensively. It's worth noting that Charlie Taylor didn't start. Vitinho moved to left back. He'd been playing this more offensive position wide on the right and moved Larsson out there. And obviously brought Amdouni in to move Odubor then over to the left. They picked an offensive team. Good luck to them. They deserved their point. I'll tell you what, I'll have a bet with you that over the next four games, they'll win something. But they probably need to win a few, really, to probably give themselves a realistic chance. They're not dead yet. But not... Chelsea, with Gusto, like I said, there's every chance not going to get any info. So unless we do get something that gives clarity to say, okay, he's out for a month or whatever, then he's got to stay, isn't he? Sheffield United and Everton afterwards. Because my first thought should be, if, like I said, I'm not making a defensive change this week. But my first thought would be, if I then come to 32 and Gusto is, say, out of 32 and 33, my first thought is still to look at Chelsea. Just because the opponents, it's nothing to do with Chelsea, it's Sheffield United and Everton. And I'd just be banking on that. Because that almost feels like the best way to do it, rather than, oh, which team's got best defensive? We're almost better off just, right, Everton can't score for Toffee, excuse the pun. Sheffield United generally struggle for goals, except they didn't on Saturday. But that's, as a two set of fixtures, Sheffield United and Everton for a defensive asset, you can't get much better than that.
No.
I'll just end up looking at, like, this aside, I'll say it's so dull. But that's what I'll end up doing, I think.
Cool. Let's talk about Nottingham Forest 1, Crystal Palace 1. Two sides that I have zero interest from a fantasy point of view right now. I don't need any enablers, don't need anything from there. Though Chris Wood is on a decent run.
Yeah, he is. And he again falls into that category, as I said, but I'd be looking at, I'd probably bench him at Tottenham. So I feel like I'd lose a fixture in 32. And listen, you could certainly make a case to play him at Tottenham because someone will score for Nottingham Forest on Sunday night. And there's every chance Wood, I suppose, is the most likely. There's concern with them. So I mentioned, obviously, Mark Southerns came on COTC during the break, and we previewed this game with Rory McLaughlin down. And both guys kind of gave the impression they thought we'd probably end up in a low-scoring draw, as it did. But Forest is becoming concerning. So since they beat Manchester United in December, they're actually only 1 point better off. Because of their 4-point deduction, they themselves, like Everton, only picked up 5 points over that period. That's now an extra one because of the draw with Palace at the weekend. But there's some strange goings on there. And there's some speculation that a bad result against Fulham, and they might change. That's too long. Wow. You're in a relegation fight and you ain't won for 3 months. I mean, it's not like, and to be fair, since they came up, obviously Marinakis was very loyal to Cooper and stuff, but rightly so.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, historically, previously, back in the Championship, there wasn't much hesitation to go and change managers. I think if they get beat against Fulham, they might change, you know.
Wow. I didn't expect you to say that.
There's a few of our patrons who support Forest have suggested they think it might happen as well. There's some weird goings on. Like, explain to me why Anthony Elanga did not start.
Yeah, I don't know. He's been playing really well.
When you're still playing Origi on the right.
Mm.
Go and look at Origi's heat map and go and look at Hudson-Odoi's and tell me what that is. I just don't know what's gone on there. I don't know how you're not starting Elanga. It's bizarre. They keep chopping about with Murillo's partner at centre-back. Some of that's been partially down to injury. He doesn't seem happy with the left-back position. Olarena come back in. Nico Williams been playing a right-back. They've been a bit better off with, obviously, Sells. Well, actually, a lot better off with Matt Sells in goal now. He's not been a problem for them, per se. And Wood is at least hitting the target up front, and Morgan Gibbs-White will chip in. But that, with Elanga not playing, it's weird, Serge. Also, in the midfield area, A lot of the Forest guys are saying like Sangare and Yates are too similar. I feel like the last time I spoke about Nicolas Dominguez, I was like, you know what, such a really like him. They found a multi-dimensional player who can play in wide areas, in a deeper midfield position, in a 10 position. Suddenly he's come out of the team and I felt like he was playing well for them. I don't really understand that one either. So yeah, there's some speculation behind the scenes that they're already clashing. And wow, there might be a change if there's a bad result. Oh, I need a reason to go and buy Rodrigo Muniz this week, don't I?
Yeah, definitely.
For Palace, there's only one category that falls of interest here. It's the free hit 34 gang. Mateta is another one of them enabling forwards that you can consider. But after Bournemouth, it's Man City and Liverpool. So I don't know, again, why that would get picked over alternatives at a similar price. They've got one of the worst fixture lists from now to the end of the season. I think they'll stay up with a handful of points. And I bet they get them across game week 34 when they host West Ham and Newcastle. And at that point, yeah, I'm very interested. The only one I could think that wildcarders now would look at this minute would be those planning for 34, say for a bench boost, is to look at like Richards.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chris Richards is the same price as Lascelles. And if I didn't want to spend any more money on my fifth defender and I wanted to keep it at 4 million or less. So I thought, even going
it's
up
useless
to...
for you. You're never going to start him. It's useless. No. You'd get more use out of a Burnley player.
That's true.
You would, honestly.
Yeah. I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel, James, for reasons to want to get Chris Richards, but I can see why some people may want him.
If people can manipulate the situation where they keep people like Muniz or Eze as part of the wild card for use in 34, great, because those two players will be a massive consideration for me on free hit. And so will Michael Olise, who we don't think will play at Bournemouth in 31, but we think will be reintegrated across the following games, probably with a target of starting against yourselves, such in game week 34 itself. And Mateta will be a reasonable one as well under that structure. So if you are going for an enabling forward and your priority is the bench boost in 34, then I can get why you want to pick him over Muniz. But don't necessarily ignore all the other fixtures around it would be the point. Yep. So it sounds like Palace would have better side the first half, probably should have won the game. I found it interesting that that's the second time now that Oliver Glasner specifically said, oh, I've been told that a draw away from home in the Premier League is good. Okay, fine, it is. I think it also says something about the mentality of that football club, which he himself wants to change, and it will take some time.
Sheffield United 3, Fulham 3. Didn't see this result come in. I think we both tipped a Fulham away win.
The best tweet, actually, it's not the best tweet I saw this weekend, because the best tweet I saw this weekend, which has nothing to do with Sheffield United and Fulham, by the way, was, have you seen this incident in the Rangers-Hibernian game in Scotland?
I have not, James.
Where a Hibernian player... the way I'm going to explain it is going to sound terrible, but you must all find this clip. A Hibernian player tries to take a free kick. It smashes one of his teammates in the back of the head, goes backwards, smashes another one of his mates in the face, and then goes back and then lands in the guy who's then prone on the floor, lands on top of him as well. You couldn't make it up. It's something out of a Benny Hill sketch, mate. That's the first best tweet I saw this weekend. The second best one was from a Fulham fan. I don't know who it was because it wasn't someone from the FPL community. But he said, I would have taken a free draw at 4-1 down. I thought that was great because I don't know why that fourth goal is disallowed.
Ollie McBurney's, right?
I don't know why it's disallowed. I don't understand that. And I've only seen what was on Match of the Day. They kind of glossed over
corrupt.
It.
Corrupt. They glossed over the West Ham penalty.
Didn't show a proper angle or properly explain what had gone on there. So I feel like it's something I need to go and chase back. But yeah, there's question marks in terms of how Fulham have ended up in that position. But what Wilder's done is he's changed it with these two powerful forwards. Brereton Diaz is not the quickest, but he's a very willing runner. And how many times in the first half of the season did I tell you?
I don't know what you mean by powerful, because he's not like physically, he's not.
No, big. I mean, he's quite skinny. He's a powerful runner in the sense that he's very direct in what he does.
Yeah.
Like he'll bustle past you rather than he's going to do lollipops and stuff like that. That's I mean.
He wants get to on score the end goals of stuff. As well. And he is direct.
He gets
in the game
positions.
Against us when he first started coming into the team, he was a threat and he is a good runner.
And how many times did I say to you in the first half of the season that they're knackered without Oliver McBurnie because he just draws free kicks, brings players into game and stuff. So that's an interesting partnership that's now got Gustavo Hama in a proper position, playing behind a couple of forwards in front of him rather than just one. So they've got a little bit of variation there Oliver Arbelas has come into the team, a young boy, playing with Vinicius Souza, came back into the team. He's a bit of a tackle monster. So the front end of it's changed. The back end, the back three, obviously they played that back four against Arsenal, which was disastrous, wasn't it? But the back three and the wing backs, that's the same. But what they're doing going forward is a lot more narrow. And I think it's condensing in the sense that teams aren't finding it quite so easy to play through them. That said, you know, they've ended up probably scraping a draw by the end of this, willing this, when they were in a position where, I mean, they were technically winning 4-1. You're not looking at Sheffield United players, I think, even with the double game week. No. I'm not going to mention the Fulham forward's name again, because I think I've done that several times over. And I think those who were looking elsewhere at Fulham, the moment was probably gone, where people were going, I want to look at Sheffield United and Nottingham Forest, if you were looking for an Iwobi punt or a Pereira or Anthony Robinson. I think that's all gone now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I think so. They might fall into an interesting line for wildcarders as enablers for the end, particularly for those looking to free hit 37. Because if you free hit 37, their last three fixtures are Palace, Brentford, Luton. But if you wanted a Fulham player, which one would you pick, Serge?
Rodrigo.
The thing is, his form is so good that threat that's, oh, well, when Breuer gets, this was the problem, wasn't it? When Breuer gets fit, like, he's going to go in the team. They've not brought him in on loan for him not to play. When Jimenez gets fit, he's going to put a real threat to him.
No.
But this fella is too hot right now. Yeah, and look at the goal he scored. It's not just the goal he scored. Look at the goals he's scoring. The way he takes the first goal against my team in game 29 and the way he's done that. You know what I loved as well, Serge? It's a weldy of a goal and he don't make a big deal of it. He's like, let's go and win the game.
Get the ball and go back. Yeah like right. He picked it up and straight back to halfway line. Let's talk about Spurs 2, Luton 1. Patrons who listened to the differential show, we joked about this. Second half, Tottenham.
Literally did, didn't we?
We did. That's exactly
I said
what
I should
thought.
Turn up at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. 1-0 down and then ended up coming back to win it 2-1. Over the course of the game, you clearly had the majority of possession, chances, domination and so on. But sometimes you can give away chances at the other end as well. Enjoyed it? Nah.
Yeah, this is going to sound really offensive to Luton. I don't mean it to, because I like what they're doing. I really like the manager. I didn't for a minute, Serge, think, actually, there was 1 minute. Other than 1 minute, I didn't have any doubt that we were going to win the game. All the way through, even at halftime, I had no concern at all that we'd come back and win the game. And there might be a psyche of what we joked about, and that has happened so many times. It's four of the last five home games that we've come from behind on one in the second half. The other game that we didn't win, by the way, we also conceded the first goal in that game against Wolves. That list of teams is Palace, Brentford, Brighton, Luton, Wolves. We've conceded the opening goal in those last five home games. It's disgusting, actually. Like, enough now. It's getting annoying. You're making the games way more difficult than they should be because you're having concentration issues. I mean, the goal we concede comes from us being in a position where we're actually in behind them. I was sitting next to my dad in the first 2 minutes. They've gone man to man all over the pitch. You could see their strategy straight away. And it's very brave. It's very brave to do that against my team. And when you go man to man, you're in 1v1 duels. And with respect for them, they've got inferior players in nearly every one of them 1v1 duels, right? So that's a really brave strategy. And it largely worked and it didn't, because you think of things like Son's miss where he's walked around the goalkeeper and it's hit both posts, and then Sar's rebound gets cleared off the line. Like, it wasn't one of them where there's a few home games we've had where we played really badly and been really sluggish in the first half. Brentford particularly springs to mind. This wasn't really one of them. Like, we could have gone in at halftime a couple up, to be honest, and it would have been different, but we've been sloppy. But I was saying to my dad, they've gone man-to-man all over the pitch. There's runners off the ball all over the place. Literally, ball over the top for Kulusevski. We're in. 15 seconds later, Luton scored. And the 1 minute where I doubted if we were going to win the game, I looked up at the clock as Luton won a corner and it was 5 minutes to go. We scored 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
And there is that for Tottenham, that there is a need for space. Almost like, come and attack us, because when we can play through lines, if you look at all those games where Tottenham have made them comebacks, there is a near identical goal in every one of them games, a ball rolled across the 6-yard line. with defenders running backwards towards their own goal. This one was brilliantly finished by Issa Kabore, which was great because I'm not sure that Werner would have finished it. He missed a sitter in the first half. He played fine, by the way, Timo Werner, but he missed a sitter in the first half as well. So, yeah, really brave strategy from Luton. They changed system as well. Part of that man-to-man system was they went to a back four. The two wide players, Chong and Townsend, did absolutely specific man-to-man jobs on Porro and Udogi. The rest of the players were a little bit free to interchange. Ross Barkley played a more advanced position. So Jordan Clark didn't play because he'd missed 3 days of training because his missus has had a child this week. I presume it was his missus. I probably shouldn't make that assumption these days. Luke Berry played, and I think that's probably because they had to train for this system, right? So Clark wasn't there, they're gone. Not going to play, mate. So they played Berry and Panzu. They did man-to-man jobs, and it meant Barkley, rather than sitting behind them, actually played in front of them on the press, which was helpful when they got the ball into high areas. You see that with his assist for Chong's goal. Do you know what? Credit to them for their effort. They were dead on their feet. Every time the ball went out of play, one of their players went down, Serge. And I know it's something we're going to have to deal with because we try and keep the ball in play so much. And when it goes out, we want to get back in and tire teams out. I spoke about this after we beat Palace. It's like, you kind of know we're going to get there, but while trying to have a bit of patience at the same time. And I think this is something Tottenham will have to deal with other teams trying to waste time and stuff. But I'm not even sure this was the case with them. Like, I think the players were fatigued to hell. I think Chong went off, and I think it was probably cramp related. I think that might be the case with Doughty as well. They were just out on their feet. That's why I said never really doubted it, because they were just getting more and more tired. And that's because the work that they were putting in to the game. They then didn't, when they had to just retreat and just sit behind the game in the second half, they've not got the quality as, say, like Arsenal did at City today. And it's difficult to compare the two. But also understand that City were coming at Arsenal as well. It just felt inevitable. Have you seen the ball over the line that wasn't over the line?
No.
The Johnson effort?
No.
The literal millimetre. You've never seen one in your life that's closer to going over the line without going over the line. So, yeah, we deserve to win the game. I think anyone can see that looking across the statistics.
You've got three good fixtures now in terms of from an attacking point of view anyway.
Well, yeah, we have to put Newcastle in that.
Yeah, we do. I've got Porro and Sonny there. I can't see myself adding a third. Look, Richie came off the bench. Johnson's popped up with two assists. Madison's is a threat at any given occasion. I just can't see a situation where I'm going to add a third. But your next three are decent. I think you're good for at least four or five goals, if not more, in the next three.
I don't even mind so much if people want. If people need to sell Son to get Salah this week, I don't mind that. I get it.
Yeah, I don't it's going to hurt, though. I wouldn't do it if it was me, if I'm honest with you. I've got bias against my own club.
I think there's every chance Salah will get more this week than Son gets in the next three. Let's set it that way. West Ham away. I want to say, I don't think he scored away to you. I don't think. Forest at home feels like, I know Nuno Ball well, right? It's going to be, spacing behind is going to be tough to come by, right? You could almost bet your life that will be 0-0 at halftime. The Newcastle game is actually really interesting for him, subject to where he plays. Because I think the goalkeeper is weak on anything that's low shots. And the one thing Sonny is an expert in terms of his finishing. And the space in behind, that might even be the best one of the next three for him. So I think where I was thinking before, yeah, I'll probably take him out in 33 for a 1 week hit for something else. Newcastle could well beat us, but I think I'd probably want to keep Sonny about. We might lose 4-3 and Sonny will get two goals and an assist or something. It feels like it could be that. So yeah, Sonny's the only one, I think. Defensively, because of the problems with like Chelsea, Newcastle, wild carders, particularly those heading for a 37 bench boost, are going to get a Tottenham defender. It's almost certainty. And I think Udogi is the one to go for. Make the saving over Porro at this moment. I'd be pretty confident such Mickey van der Ven will come back in against you. That is cheap. And he will come back in the team. I'm very confident he'll play against you, particularly because of Antonio. And his recovery pace, van der Ven, is astonishing, mate. I've not been impressed with Dragosin at all. But what he did work out, in fairness to him, in the second half was, because they were man-to-man all over the pitch, if he could beat the man, just carry the ball up the pitch. And because they're so focused on man-to-man elsewhere, he'd be finding himself, oh, I've gone to the edge of the box. And that's what Tottenham eventually realised, was once they could beat people or play beyond people, that's where they'd kill them. And Johnson, in fairness to him, was absolutely key to that again. He's now got most attacking returns of any substitute in the Premier League this season. Really, really, really good contribution. Really pleased with him in three of the last four games now. He told you it was like a light bulb moment in that Crystal Palace game, I think. And I think it's worth saying with him, I think this is one to factor in for bench boosters at the end, because there's every chance he won't start the two games at the end against Burnley at City and City. But I'd have a bet that he'll return off the bench even in that case, because he almost looks more effective in that scenario where other teams have got so fatigued against us and you just play him in. He's so rapid. So that's a big improvement on it. And he might get in the team over. He'll be pushing Kulusevski now, because the problem is he wants the wide players to get to the byline. And Kulusevski wants to come inside all the time. But without Kulusevski, the team does lose a little bit of its control and creativity at the same time, I think. I look at that front three of Werner, Son, Johnson, and I think you're just pace merchants. Like, there's no guile to it. So it's about finding the balance. But Johnson's putting pressure on Kulusevski now.
Luke Berry, well, I switched over to your game from the Chelsea game for a little bit just to see what was going on. Well, actually, I switched over because I had Sonny captain. I wanted to see if he's going to get me any points. Luke Berry, I don't know if he's not Ed from Fantasy Fest in Fantasy Football Fest in disguise.
I wouldn't even know what he looked like. So,
hey, Luke Berry.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you, mate. Oh, he's played
why?
So little.
Because you need like binoculars at your place. Come on. Now, I've looked at him on TV and I just had to double take. Ed, you can if he listens, I have no idea if he does. Double take. I reckon Luke Berry is Ed from Fantasy Football Fest in disguise. Aston Villa 2, Wolves 0. Comfortable home win in the end. The Wolves did create some problems. They were pretty decent, but I think
Wolves were excellent the first 25 minutes.
They just you kind of felt like if they had their first choice attackers out there, they'd be able to do some damage here, but it fell a little bit short in the final kind of.
I wish they hadn't been good in that first 25 minutes. It got my hopes up. I, all day I was thinking that they're too weak up front with no, you know, Cunha's not going to be fully fit, no Huang, no Neto. Where are they going to get the returns? Bellegarde ruled out as well. They're so light offensively. I really, really fancied Villa for a clean sheet, and I thought it would end like as it did, fairly routine. But I watched the opening 25 minutes. I got my hopes up, Suj. Have you seen the 8 Nori miss?
No, I didn't see that.
Don't know what the XG on it is, but there's no way he can't score. Like, Martinez does really well, don't get me wrong, but it's like 6 yards out and he just puts it straight at him. He's controlled it. It's not one of them across the box. He's controlled it. Rolled it in the corner, mate. Mm. And who knows? We might have got a different game there, because once Wolves get themselves in front, they've been good defensively against a lot of the big teams. I've seen that first down and beat my team twice this year. So it's just really short in terms of personnel at the moment. And, obviously, Nathan Fraser had been playing recently. They brought another young boy into the team, Chiwami, who did all right. But I don't think it's probably not quite ready for this yet. And Wolves need to get offensive players back quickly. Like, I would probably expect, Suj, if Cunha doesn't play in the week, I think Burnley will beat him.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
Burnley, there's every chance they'll counter well on Wolves. What was really surprising in the game was how much of the ball Wolves had in the opening 25 minutes. I felt like I was watching the Villa-Tottenham game all over again. Just Wolves had no output at the end. But they actually managed to create more than my team did in the first half at Villa Park. So, yeah, their heads went once they conceded, because I don't think they felt they had the belief to then chase the game with the lack of attacking players that they had. And second half, Villa could have ended up winning by more than 2-0.
Trout Gomez is a good player.
I thought Tommy Doyle in that first 25 minutes was brilliant as well. Really, really good. Both of them in midfield.
That midfield got me thinking, because I don't even remember when they signed Joao Gomez or where he came from. There's no fuss about him particularly, but he's a good player.
He is. I mean, he was really good for Brazil against England. Mm. So there'll be clubs looking at him. We know that Wolves, because we've done this on Patreon, so we know Wolves need to sell this summer. And the assumption is it's Neto. I wouldn't be surprised people looking at him, you know, as well. He's in the Brazil squad as well, and that now people will be looking at him. Good player.
18 million euros, 15 million quid.
Well, they'll be asking for 40 plus, I think, mate. Yeah. Minimum.
Yeah.
For a full Brazil international. Yeah, it's just, and his age.
23. Yeah.
That's a minimum, mate. Yeah. Good player. For Villa, you'd be a bit concerned for them. I think if this Watkins injury is serious, and we don't know anything at this stage, we think he was taken off as a precaution, but I still think the fact that you've taken him off and the game's not won says enough, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play at City and they try and get him ready for Brentford in 32, but let's obviously see what comes out with the team. The problem with Unai Emery is his press conferences are always late. Right. So you can imagine he'll be about half two Tuesday, probably, and the deadline's six. So he'll be waiting till near the end, sort of half three-ish, 3 o'clock probably, before you get the information on Ollie Watkins. The back four that played, that's the back four that I think will play the majority of the games that are left. In your case, Serge, I think Moreno has maintained his place as being ahead of Luca Dean, but it is another game Wednesday and then another game Saturday. You can't be surprised if someone like that gets rotated. But the Conte Carlos Torres inside of that, I think, will stick. They'll struggle at City without John McGinn, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if Watkins doesn't play, if they just played Diaby at the top and play Irogbin and behind Tielemans and Luiz in that particular fixture and try and get Bailey and Rodgers high. Rodgers was quite impressive in the game at the parts where Villa was struggling. He was a really good ball carrier for them. I can see why they've had interest in him now. My theory on Leon Bailey ending up too wide with Moussa Diaby in the team felt right. I didn't watch the game at any point thinking, oh crap, I've left Bailey on the bench here. This is a problem. I didn't watch the game and have the vibe that he'd return. And yet I've owned him for months and, you know, he's been really good for me, Serge. So I just think it just doesn't work as well with Diaby inside for him. I think he tends to end up wider. But largely with Villa, City away, you're not buying this week. And I can't see a path really where wildcarders are looking now. It would have been a case of hold Watkins or don't. And the excuse is certainly there to sell now.
3.29 versus 0.59 XG, 31 shots, 14 corners, 6 big chances, and you go into injury time losing 1-0.
The game made me angry.
If you look at the stats, it's like hit the woodwork 4 times. Shots inside the box of those 31, 24. Yeah, phenomenal.
The game legitimately made me angry, Serge. And look, from my position, Manchester United are chasing, so I obviously had a preference for them not to win the game. But I also know if my team do the business, it's not too much of a problem. But I was just more annoyed for Brentford, or even more than my own position, because how they'd ended up in a position they were losing. And you couldn't even look at it and go, ah, oh, they've bottled it, or it was just how they wasn't winning the game, mate. They battered them.
United's team didn't particularly feel under strength. Look, Wan-Bissaka playing out on the left maybe is
they had problems.
And Casemiro maybe ahead of McTominay, but Varane, you'd consider first choice. Lindelof played large parts of last season. Garnacho, Bruno, and Rashford behind Hoyland is their first choice front four, you'd consider.
Let's give them a little bit of the mitigating here. So obviously Wan-Bissaka at left back is not ideal, particularly in a game where you're going to have more of the ball. I mean, what was United's possession stats?
54.
Yeah, I mean, that's laughable because it didn't 53. Feel like they had the ball at all in the game. So, you know,
they completed more passes than Brentford.
They cannot play out from the back unless Martinez plays. Basically, that's why they go direct so much through Onana, because none of them, and this includes Varane, none of them are good enough in terms of their distribution. Varane won't give it away, but he's only playing 10 yards passes right or left. So they even go forwards. None of them have got that impact from the back other than Martinez. And Martinez steps out and looks comfortable. You know, Maguire does that. He looks like in America, you get them double-decker trains.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like one of them stepping out of a football when it's Maguire. When Martinez does it, it looks comfortable and creates angles and options for people. Otherwise, when he doesn't play, and he has been a big miss for them recently. Varane went off as a precaution at halftime. Lindelof went off in the second half, suspected hamstring problem. That's a bigger problem because I think the idea had been with what they were doing, moving Dalot. Ideally, they want to move him from right back into midfield, was played Lindelof at left back. Keep that, stick with that. You have Martinez then in the middle of that. And you've got a back three in possession, and then Dalot joins Maino. Because I said to you, I think he wants to go 4-1-4-1. Maino, unfortunately, just got swamped in this, because what do Brentford want to do as well? Second balls. But the thing is with Brentford, even though they're quite direct, once they get in the final third, play some good stuff. Really good. It reminded me of a game when they first come up, and they lost 1-0 at home to Chelsea, and then were really unlucky in that game. And it just felt like the whole half was played in Chelsea's game. This whole match felt like it was played in Manchester United's half. Brentford were really good. There's an opportunity here, and I've been thinking this for a while with Brentford assets, that because they don't double, they're just largely going to get overlooked. Tony is going nowhere for me at the moment. Really threatening, good performance. It seems to, whenever I watch him against a big opponent, which looks a good player to me as well, we know there's going to be interest in him from other clubs in the summer. I look at Sheffield United at home, and I think, again, for those who are free hitting 34 and then wildcard in 35, I think a lot of people are going to land on 33 and go, shit, I want to buy Tony, or I want to buy Mbeumo, or I want to buy Reguilón for a one-week punt. By the way, the solution there, if you want a defensive one for a one-week, might be a centre-back, because Sheffield United are obviously weak on set plays as well. And Tom Med will be on COTC prior to that game as well. So I look at Tony playing Brighton this week. I mean, how many chances did they give up today? Sheffield United 33. Villa 32 is not so appealing. I've probably got a selection dilemma between Tony and Bailey for that. But I think I just play Tony. Clear talisman. Capable at any time. He had a couple of really good efforts in this. And obviously the return of Mbeumo is a major plus for them as well. I don't think they will win the next two, probably. But I wouldn't be surprised if from the Sheffield United game till the end of the season, they go back to a back four. I was suspicious they might do it for this game. Purely because then they can get Mbeumo, Vissa and Tony all in the same team, whereas they'll probably keep easing Mbeumo in for the next two, I think, with the intention to get him in the team for 33. And that crowd, like us, are going to, 1 week at the end, Brentford home, Sheffield United appeals, mate.
Liverpool 2, Brighton 1. I think the worst thing Brighton could have probably done was score as early as they did, because it gave Liverpool the entire game to pretty much dominate. Similar to Brentford, 30 shots in the end, 55% possession, but a really high XG at 2.79, and they could comfortably have scored more goals. I didn't feel particularly that Brentford threatened, even though after they had scored, I thought Quansah played really well.
Yeah, he was good, Jurrell Quansah, yeah.
I think, I don't know if it's fair to say Van Dijk-like, but as a young, just his, he stands up, he doesn't panic, he puts his foot in well, he's got some pace and strength. I thought Quansah was really good today, just confident, even though he is so young. And you couldn't see anything other than a Liverpool win, even though Brighton were ahead for up until the equaliser.
Yeah, but when Brighton did get in Liverpool's half, you always fancied that they could create and would potentially score themselves. There's no doubt Liverpool deserved to win the game.
A Dingra kind of, sort of.
They really targeted side. I think Quansah played well, and we all really like Conor Bradley, but there was a clear, particularly in the first half, get a Dingra down that side was a clear strategy. And they had some success with that. We think Trent's going to be back for game week 32. Konate played for France during the break, so I was a bit surprised that he didn't start. But I think there has been a lean into perhaps protecting Konate for games where they feel like they absolutely need him. And Manchester United away next Sunday probably springs to mind, considering their performance there a couple of weeks ago. Liverpool are now favourites for the league, Suj, with the bookies.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me, being three points clear. And obviously, three clear of City, right? And two clear of Arsenal. But yeah, they just don't lose at Anfield. It's not even they don't lose. They win all their games at Anfield. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, I mean,
but the away games have challenges, don't they? Manchester United, Fulham, West Ham, Villa.
But between,
that's a challenging set of four away games.
Arsenal, City and Liverpool are not going to pick up all of their points between now and the end of the season. They're just not. Question is, who's going to slip up where and when?
Particularly City. I wouldn't be surprised if City win every game left.
With a back line that now doesn't have Ake and doesn't have Edison, and you got Akanji playing out right back. Rico Lewis ended up.
Stones was on the bench, so presumably he's not that far away.
Yeah.
Edison, we fought a train, so I presume he's not that far away.
Yeah, but they got to come to your place, and they never win at your place, James. So.
Yeah, but they did in the cup in January, because they worked out how to play against my team. And we might have to roll over to stop Arsenal winning the league. Do you know what I mean?
Now, Liverpool looking good, though.
I mean, in seriousness, against Brighton, City go to Brighton in 34. You just think they'd have too much know-how even for Brighton. Insisso's out again till after that period. Should have mentioned that. Villa's a test, but I think Villa without John McGinn, they should have too much for. There's just too many problems for Villa off the ball without him, I think. And then, yeah, sure, there's the Tottenham game, which we assume will be at the end. But, yeah, I could see the rest of the games, you're just looking at me thinking, yeah, City win them. Like, even Fulham away, it'd be right at the end, it's 37. If City need to go there and win, they will do, won't they?
Yeah, I get that, because City can go on runs at any time, James. But you've got to remember, they've obviously got Champions League still. They've got FA Cup still. And they've got injuries at the back. That's why I'm just saying, and you get to the end of the season, the pressure builds.
Liverpool don't have that in... they've obviously got Europa League games. They've also got Europa League games where they will strongly fancy themselves to deal with them anyway. Plus, I think even the fans would be a bit forgiven at this stage. Go and win that league. It's in your hands. Go and win that league. I think if they're favourites now, if they win at United, assuming they beat Sheffield United, if they win at Manchester United next week, they'll go odds on.
Yeah.
And we'd probably at that stage go, yeah, I think they're probably going to do it. So that feels like the key game now is probably Liverpool at Manchester United next week. Because obviously it could flick like that, and then afterwards they walk out of Old Trafford and they're third. And then it's different, right? So, look, there was some outstanding performance for Liverpool. You mentioned Joel Quant. So I think I've got to give a special mention for Alexis McAllister. Was good. Absolutely brilliant in midfield. And also, interestingly, perhaps one who can't get to the right player they want and looking to bench boost in game week 34. I want to say he's returned in the last five now, I think, Suj, Alexis McAllister. Is it a reasonable Correct. Price? Is similar price to Declan Price? What price is he?
5.8.
I mean, it's not terrible. And also, if you think about it, if you went McAllister for the next few, that potentially, if you're running through and perhaps not wildcarding afterwards, you just go straight into Gordon or Garnacho from there, aren't you? Or Harvey Barnes even. Just makes so much sense after that week in 35. So yeah, I don't hate Alexis McAllister. I think he probably falls more into the bench boost crowd rather than a go and buy, because I still wouldn't buy a McAllister over those players. I realise Gordon's obviously suspended this week, but I wouldn't make a case otherwise. But for bench boosters, 34, yeah, I don't mind it. There was a very familiar comment today for Nunes owners, especially those who owned him for the first time. Because normally when people buy him for the first time, they obviously get frustrated with him. And they're like, ah, I see what this circus is all about now and why you lot stress about him so much. A quiet day. What Liverpool did quite interestingly in the second half is they moved the front three about quite a bit. So for there was a good 10-minute period where Salah
up
and Nunes,
on the left from time to
yeah,
time.
Salah went through the middle, Nunes went on the right. Then they changed it back again, ended up on the left. Diaz popped up on the right for a bit. And that just pulled Brighton about. Brighton like to do things quite man-to-man as well. And you see that on the winning goal as well, where Van Heek ends up in a terrible position that plays Salah onside. But why does he end up in that position? Because he's worried about Nunes. So indirectly, Nunes had a really, really big impact just with his presence. And I do always feel that Liverpool are better off having him in and around the penalty area for things like that. Van Heek goes deep because he's worried the cross is going to come in for Nunes. Goes deeper. Salah's rolled off the shoulder. McAllister plays a beautiful pass. And despite the fact, I think it was his ninth shot, you didn't doubt he was going to score. He could have got a monster haul today. Yeah. And people like me who don't own him have got away with murder. That said, I could have had more from Son yesterday as well. I could have had more from Tony yesterday. But yeah, Salah he should have got that trick today, really. And there's every chance he'll take it out on Sheffield United. That's even more, isn't it? It's not like, oh, Salah's just used up his haul. You're looking and look how many efforts he's had. I'm sure on the XG tables, even though he's returned,
he's
probably
1.49.
Still
due. Yeah.
What was his XG?
1.49.
Just him alone, yeah? Mm. I mean, without a pen in there, that's massive in a 90-minute football match for one player without a penalty. So, yeah, I think he'll be majority of people's captain this week. And I can understand, like I said, if people need to cut out someone like Son to get there, I think probably should, in all seriousness. I wasn't going to leave it be. We think Alisson, Alexander-Arnold and Jota will all be close for the Manchester United game in game week 32. So for the likes of you with Kelleher, it's all good for this week. Same with like Connor Bradley. Then there becomes a debate, and that's probably a little bit annoying for those who want to bench boost in 34, is that the Liverpool options might become a bit conflicting. And obviously, Europe will start up. We've got midweek Premier League fixtures. Gakpo and Jota are going to take minutes off some of them others and stuff, aren't they? You know it.
Man City nil. It wasn't West Ham, was it? It looked like West Ham, didn't it, though, James? Man City nil, Arsenal nil.
To be honest, there's a lot of harsh things I could say about Arsenal, but I don't think even I could say something that harsh.
No, I mean, look, that game, there's a big difference between Arsenal sticking 10 men behind the ball, but being defensively good because they can defend and West Ham can't. And I would draw attention to even Klaitz was saying after the game, well, obviously, he loves it after a good result, that he one of the best defences in the world is Klaitz's take on it. But it ended up being pretty much one-way traffic for most of the game.
That doesn't feel fair. Even I have to say that.
Yeah, I mean, but it was like possession territory wise and the flow of the game, but it didn't ever feel like, I think City were happy to take a 0-0 draw and they'd keep jabbing away, whereas Arsenal were happy to just put their lines up and take a 0-0 draw. I didn't think either side, it's not fair to say either side didn't want to win the game. You go into every game of football, they want to win the game, but both of them knew 0-0 was a fair outcome to just walk away with.
Arsenal gave themselves, in my opinion, the best strategy to try and win the game. And actually, with the counter-attack with Trossard, where he should cross it for Martinelli near the end, was the big moment. But if he manages to get the pass away, it's not an easy pass, in fairness, but if he gets the pass away, Arsenal win the game. And we'd all be sitting here now going, genius. Went to the Etihad, stopped them from having a decent effort on goal in the whole game and won 1-0.
Yep.
The narrative is so often affected by the end result. I thought Arsenal's defensive display was exceptional. I don't know how you could be critical of it, considering they've gone to a team that, what did I say? They haven't failed to score in a home game in 2.5 years, and it didn't once look like scoring. Literally, Nathan Aki's header in the first half, Rick Canfield's shoulder, was basically the only moment that City had. They never looked like they were going to break them down. The two centre-backs for Arsenal were outstanding. The goalkeeper was safe. When Pep decided to change it up and put Doku on the right wing, he instantly went, put Tomiyasu out there. That's enough of that.
Yeah. I did think Kivior was a little shaky, but, you know,
he did all right. But also, I think it's fair to say that Bernardo was an easier opponent for him because he always wanted to go inside. And it wasn't like he didn't have Cole Walker coming on the outside as well, right? It was a Kanji. And then obviously later on, it was Rico Lewis. So periods moved into midfield and periods didn't. So he wasn't getting doubled up. That didn't help. It was only City were only able to do it on the left-hand side. Pep went with the exact system that I thought we'd go with, the exact 11. In terms of that Bernardo on the right, he does that so much when he's got doubts. He just defaults to playing Bernardo Silva on the right. And I thought they'd push Kvaratskhelia really high. I thought Kvaratskhelia was probably City's best player, actually. I thought he was really good at left back. And I think, by the way, with Aki's injury, if subject to how that is, if you do want a City defender, that's the one to go and get now, is Josko Kvaratskhelia. I thought he was really good. As a natural left footer, he'll play a lot now. That doesn't mean he's going to play all the Premier League games, because it's almost a certainty now that he plays the Champions League games, so you do have to factor that in. But he'll play a lot. Let's put it that way, subject to how bad that Aki injury is. But I think on that performance, he'll play quite a bit anyway. My theory on keeping Foden and playing him was very much because of what they had left. They would do that with Vardy going really advanced. Their win at Newcastle was a really good example of that. And that would allow Foden to get into the dangerous areas. And he did. But Arsenal just had it shut down and so narrow all the time. Declan Rice was great, obviously. I think Jorginho did really well for his period on the game as well. I thought Martin Odegaard's pressing at the top end was extraordinary, the effort that he was getting through, actually. I thought it was outstanding off the ball. He let himself down for some of his passing in the last half hour, and I think that was because he was so fatigued with how hard he'd worked. He really put in a proper leadership performance. I mean, Arsenal thoroughly deserved what they got. I hate to say it, they thoroughly deserved what they got. The question is, should they have done more to win it? You open up against City and exploit yourself, you'll probably die. They, if there was a winner today that deserved it, you'd have had to say it was Arsenal. City did nowhere near enough. You're at home. You're behind as well. It's your responsibility. I think as well, the game also manifested in what it did as well, because there's a third opponent. It's not just City and Arsenal going against each other. I think it would have felt for whoever lost today, even if it was City, you'd have looked at them, 4 points behind Liverpool, and you start going, we got no control over this now. And as it is, they don't. But it's still only one switch of result. City have been here before, where they were 4 points behind Liverpool at a similar stage. And I think Liverpool drew two games in a row. I want to say it was maybe 2 and 3. They drew, ironically, this is interesting, 0-0 at Man United, 0-0 at Everton, which is two of the away games have got coming up. Interesting, if I remember right. And that's how City pulled them back. I'm sure that was the year Liverpool also beat us in the Champions League final. That feels right. So City, from that experience, might feel that they can pull that back. But from 4 points again now, nah. And the thing with Liverpool as well is, right, we said, could they get through this period with these injury problems? And now you're potentially putting Alisson, Trent, Konate, Jota, like, back in it. They're getting stronger for the running, right?
Agreed.
So that's why they'll now be favourites with the bookies. And I think if either had lost today, they'd have thought, oh, shit. I always say it, so you don't ever want to be behind City. And from Arsenal's perspective, they lost today, they obviously would have been. And you're not just catching City, you're catching Liverpool. And there's possibly a case to say Arsenal might have the biggest test left of the three. I actually think from here on in, I mean, I've got on my ticker for the remaining fixtures, I've got City 4th best, Liverpool 5th best, Arsenal 8th best. So there's not a lot in it, even on the fixtures as well. Liverpool and City have got the experience and the know-how of how to do this at the end, right? That's what might cost Arsenal. But I think they did really well today, and they're definitely the most reliable team in this league from a defensive standpoint. No doubt about it. And those of us who wildcard in 35 are going to have to factor in that they've got really good home games in 36 and 38.
Let's get into some of the questions we've had in on Twitter as well, James, shall we? Or X.com or the Bird app.
Just one more thing. Haaland was shit today.
Yeah.
I think the two defenders were outstanding, but it was crap. And I think because we blow so much praise on him, we'd say that today. It was rubbish. His link play was just non-existent. And I know that happens anyway, but I'm not judging him on his goals. I'm judging him on his performance. They would have been better playing Alvarez in hindsight. Kevin De Bruyne, I think, stayed on the pitch because of his delivery. But I was watching the game, obviously wanting Arsenal to lose, and I was thinking, take him off.
I'll have a look at...
When those two play as a front two, which are near enough did today, they can't press in the same way, and they haven't got enough... into De Bruyne has lost a yard, which is no fault of his own. It's age and the injuries he's had. But I think it's probably getting to the stage in the near future where he'll get phased out of that and Foden's going to take over from him. That night when City put on that brilliant performance at Tottenham in the FA Cup, I told you they were unbelievable off the ball. But neither De Bruyne or Haaland played. I think that's important.
7 completed passes for Haaland today.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not uncommon.
It was difficult to get him service, but it's the little things, like even his attacking in the box from crosses and stuff. I never felt like he was going to get on the... You know, with him, you feel like, oh, stand it at the back post, you'll get on the end of it. Nah, and that's compliment to Arsenal's two centre-backs, but I never felt like he was going to score today. That's probably the first time I've ever watched him before. I don't think he'll score.
Cool. A few of the questions that we had on next before we Let's wrap this episode. Listeners, thank you so much for giving us your ears on this kind of bank holiday in the UK with the quick turnaround. And
sorry for the shitty video edit, but Nico's on holiday.
Yeah, exactly that.
So I'm doing it.
You know, when we started, it was bright and you were like, I've got the lights on because it's going to get dark. And
now you're in the dark.
Not putting the lights on. I've got a light right in front of me, but yeah. So we are just trying to get that content, keep it flowing before I'm away for a bit and Clayton takes over some
trip.
Of the shows in the week as well. This is an interesting one. Only Dozy says, Isak and Palmer, are they captaincy options for game week 31? Isak's at, I had the fixtures in front of me. Where's Isak?
Newcastle have Everton at home and Palmer has Manchester United.
Tuesday kickoff.
Manchester United, we should have said this in the paper. Manchester United have conceded more shots in the Premier League in 2024 than any other team, including Sheffield United.
Would you roll the dice on Palmer? I think if you own Salah...
No, I'm Captain Mo, aren't I?
If you own Salah, it's just a no-brainer.
Unless the only way I wouldn't captain Salah at this stage, or even I'm taking a minus four to get him, the only reason I wouldn't would be if I had some form of inkling following that game today that he won't start on Thursday. And I don't really have that. Now, I do think there's a possibility he doesn't play 90 minutes, but I'm not really that concerned about that. I think he starts. They're in pole position. They'll want to maintain it. He gets the armband. In any case, even if he didn't start, he'd come on and score in the last half hour. Yes, it's Mo. If I was looking for an alternative this week, Saka for me.
Well, why no Tony? Since do you think Saka will play versus Luton? I've no doubt about it.
Well, he was maybe getting helped off today, but I feel like I've seen that a lot. Does he ever leave the pitch normally? I don't know if it's like become some sympathy thing with him. Or nobody was doubting that Saka and Gabriel were going to play today. Did anybody truthfully believe for one moment that they wouldn't play? There might be a little bit of a change here in the sense they've got the Champions League games. They'll beat Bayern Munich comfortably, by the way. Seriously. They will have no... I'm so confident. I desperately hope I'm wrong. I don't think they'll have any problem at all with Bayern Munich. Saka would be next in line. What you've got to think is as well is for Luton, man, like I told you, they're dropping like flyers in that game. They've got so many injuries anyway, and Arsenal will probably exploit it better than my team did at the weekend. The only thing from that is, yeah, fine, they didn't play Brighton Saturday, which is a challenging physical test. You know Brighton, you're going to get challenged. Liverpool will have known that today. So do they take their foot off a little bit? Yeah, maybe, but I think they'll create chances at will. And the only reason not to say Saka was second best, I think Saka probably better than Haaland. The only reason, again, would be a minor doubt that he starts, but he always starts. So, I think he starts.
Daniel wants to know a similar price replacement for Lascelles for bench boost in 37. It's still quite a way out.
I mean, a similar price. What price are Lascelles? 3.9. There's not a lot of doublers in 37. Is there any?
Probably not.
Gusto. Oh, he's injured as well. The only ones would be similar price now would be Newcastle. Keep an eye on Lewis Hall. You can't put him in on wild card. Can't. You're either going to have to come back to it. I had a little inkling when Watkins got injured yesterday. You think, am I better off just wildcarding now? If I was wildcarding now this week to prepare to bench boost in 37, I wouldn't have a clue what to do. I think I'd go Gvardiol, Udogi. I'd leave Gusto in unless he was ruled out. I'd try and work Trippier in.
Dalot?
Maybe. I would definitely go Onana as my keeper. Definitely. I'd be thinking I'd go Onana, and I'd arguably go with Kelleher. So I'd play Kelleher this week, maybe, and then have Onana from the stretch afterwards. Or mind you, if I was bench boosting, I wouldn't. I'd probably take a chance on Petrovic. That feels dangerous. So the defensive assets, the of goalkeepers and defenders, the only one I'd be absolutely certain I'd have if I was wildcard now for bench boost is Onana. Onana covers you great for 34 as well. I know he hasn't got a double, but it's Sheffield United at home, so it's nice as a single. Defensive assets for 37 look like a mess. Absolute mess. If you want reliability, go and get Lewis Dunk, he'll play.
We'll wrap the show, James, with two non-FPL questions. FPL takeaway says, who do you both think wins the title race? Surely advantage Liverpool. I think the psychological
I think next
element...
Sunday's the next Sunday's the big game.
Yeah, the Klopp leaving is a big advantage psychologically for Liverpool. I think they'll want to get over the line for him. And they just don't seem to lose at Anfield. They just win everything at Anfield. So I would say Liverpool from now on in are going to do it. Like, Arsenal got the best goal difference by a considerable amount. I don't know if it's going to help in any way, but they're quite a bit more 11 than Man City.
Yeah, it does help. Of course it
and
does.
And only six more than Liverpool. So that can get clawed back, but and it's kind of might, worth an extra
there,
point.
There might be a consciousness on the games this week as well.
Get that goal difference up.
Well, for Arsenal, if you look at the fixtures afterwards, and it's not to say they can't, but Brighton, Villa, Wolves, Chelsea, Tottenham as the five fixtures afterwards, don't scream with Villa, Chelsea being the two home games. Don't scream like they're going to be winning 5-0. They might win them all. But, you know, that period where they had the couple of 6-0s in a row and stuff, that doesn't feel like that will be in there. They might be looking at Luton and thinking, yep, let's put another 6 on the board. By the way, so will Liverpool.
Liverpool. So will Liverpool. United. Yeah. So
it's that tight that, yes, that might even be a consideration for this week. Whereas for City, I don't think that becomes a consciousness. And City got the 12:30 Saturday as well. City will be right win.
Yeah.
I think, as I said to you, I think while City can still challenge it, I think they'll win every game. I think that will only change, basically, when they don't. I generally think City win every game left.
I don't think it's possible.
I'm still going to say City.
And FPL Sponge. What's happening, Spongy? Given that you're recording on Easter Sunday, what's your favourite meat for a roast dinner?
James likes a
nut roast.
Sorry, I love animals and stuff, but it's a roast lamb.
Mushroom porter butter. Whenever you see that vegetarian option, no, I'm a meat guy as well. I'm pretty torn. I don't know if I would pick a favourite between chicken, beef, or lamb, James. I'm with you, lamb. But you got to have mint sauce, right? Do you have mint sauce for your lamb? Yeah, all day long.
She ate it. Your breath stinks. I don't care. I'm enjoying my dinner. I don't care.
Yeah, mint sauce does it for me. Otherwise, chicken, if it's cooked well, you can't beat a bit of good chicken, although it's a bit bog standard. And then I love roast beef as well. I don't eat a lot of beef anymore these days, James. So when I do, and it's a roast, it does feel like a bit of a special occasion. So I'm going to go lamb, beef, chicken.
Yeah, I'll be the same. Gammon?
Yeah, I like gammon as well. Gammon. Bit of crackling as well. If there's some going, all day long. You made me want to go to a carvery, James, where you can have a little bit of everything.
Should do that next Sunday. Just sack off United Liverpool. Can you believe this game of ours against Forest been moved to 6 o'clock on a Sunday?
That's a stupid time. Away, right?
Well, I don't get. So there's only one train station. The biggest problem is there's only going to be one train station open around Wild Lane. And you know transport issues around Tottenham's big problem.
Is it your place, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was meant to be on the Monday night and the strike's all in London and stuff. So it's only be, I don't even know what station was going to be open, but it was only be one of the, they say that there's 6 that serve Wild Lane. Yeah, but some of them are like 40-minute walks, but only one of them was going to be open. It was like, so the safety advisory group advised that the game couldn't happen. Oh, and guess what? You can't just postpone it because Tottenham have already got these two games far in the future that need to be arranged, which the Premier League stupidly hasn't arranged one of them yet. So they came up with this idea, we'll move it back to the Sunday. Yeah, that's fine. But why didn't they move it to like a 1:30 kickoff so the Nottingham Forest fans could go home afterwards? They aren't going home after 6 o'clock kickoff, are they? Again, go back to that podcast did on Tuesday. It's absurd. Catch up with that. We did a podcast on fans' anger with fixture scheduling. 6 o'clock on a Sunday. You know what? They've done that as well, Serge. Because part of the idea of the next TV deal is that there are going to be some like 6 o'clock or 6:30 Sundays. So this has given them a convenient, let's check what our viewing figures are going to be like for that. Well, of course they're going to be good as well. Straight after Manchester United against Liverpool. Oh, look at our viewing figures for a 6 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday. Wankers, honestly.
Oh, dear.
You've got the two biggest clubs in the country playing each other and Tottenham Forest on straight afterwards. Of course the viewing figures are going to be like, the viewing figures would be good anyway, but they'll be doubly excessive because of that.
Well, look, the Premier League and the referees and the VAR and all of them can go take a jump off a cliff. The politest thing I could say is go and take a jump somewhere, mate, because I've had enough of all of them this weekend. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Planet FPL. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you are listening to the podcast. I'm away for this week, travelling. So Clayton will be filling my shoes alongside some other guest hosts. Ian Parrin for Sky this week as well. You've got coming on, haven't you?
I've been waiting for 10 minutes. You're going to run through the schedule, James, or not?
You can. If you're ready to go for it.
Not the deadline stream because I'm going to West Ham. So there's no deadline stream Tuesday. So I'll do not the deadline stream at lunchtime, 12 o'clock on Tuesday, and we'll smash it out as an audio as well. I mean me, obviously. Ian Parrin is joining me for the SkyPod Wednesday. Clash of Correspondents Thursday is Fulham versus Newcastle with Dara Curran and Simon Bibby. Friday, we'll be doing the Game Week 31 game review podcast myself. And Clayton, if you want to support the show, it's www.patreon.com/planetfpl. We've got Game Week preview podcasts on Tuesday and Friday. We've got Tottenham Arsenal on Wednesday, and we've got a quiz on Thursday as well for the podcast.
Nice. Listeners, thank you so much for your ears. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the rest of the Easter weekend. Play it your way and be nice to each other. Cue music, please. Man Child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.